Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
Hey, we're here with a Star Trek episode.
We are. I really enjoyed the two out of the three issues. I mean, I enjoyed all of them.
Yeah.
But I really feel like it turned a page in six and seven, so I'm excited to talk about them.
All right. Yeah, we'll get into it because it's a three-issue episode. Because there's basically the conclusion of some stuff from the first arc, and then we get into basically a second arc.
Oh, it's a mini. It's not really a bottle episode if it's two issues, I feel. But a more classic Trek story.
True. But we did think that the first four were like two and two, and they're really not.
Yeah.
I guess in retrospect. So this weekend in Minnesota, it's weirdly warm. So last weekend, remember, we were like, this is October weather. It's moody outside.
It's perfect.
Cool. It's perfect. Now, the high today at my place is 79.
It's 80 at my place, which is disgusting for October.
Yeah, this is climate change in action. Like,
between this and it's the warmest, driest September on record last month. We haven't had rain before this weekend for like a month.
And it was barely anything.
Like the pots, I dug up a celery. Mm-hmm. You had dug up a thyme and a rosemary from the garden to save them for the winter. They were outside and the driveway was clearly wet. The cars had water on them. But the dirt in the pots looked dry as a bone.
Yep.
And it's like a fake rain. And the trees are so stressed out.
Yeah.
It's too hot. It's too dry. They need water in the fall in general.
Yes.
And we haven't had like a good soaking rain in so long.
No. And it got to the point because yesterday we harvested the root vegetables. Well, some of them, parsnips and carrots.
We're hoping the rutabagas can finish before they go kaput.
Yeah. So on Friday, I used the sprinkler to wet everything down so we could dig up these fuckers from the garden.
And it was still hard.
Yeah.
Like, they did not want to come up.
No.
And the shovel did not want to go in.
Yeah. Like, carrots snapped when I was trying to pull them. It's not like me as Rabbit in Winnie the Pooh just pulling up carrots. Like, they were not coming up easy.
And the parsnips, like, you would think that for that type of vegetable that, like, the leaves would be joining the root right at ground level. No, it was like an inch down where the leaves were starting to come up from. So they were bigger and deeper, but some of them did look really good.
Yeah. Which I guess we'll find out after we record.
I ate one last night.
So we can, we started making a turkey dinner far too late. We were in the kitchen though, starting at like 3. And
we used all the counter space.
Yep. Which is remarkable in my kitchen. Like, I designed that kitchen to have an acre of counters to use, and somehow we used it all.
There were big bowls. There were multiple big bowls. And I had to put the apple crisp off to the side, like on a little stool, because we were so out of space. I also got some apples from a coworker. Thank you, the Ooskies. Ooskies. It's O. Mm. Everyone at work and all the people who come in are like, mess it up. And now I just messed it up too.
No.
So thank you to them because that is the apple crisp that is inside. Fun fact, it gets juicier if you cover it. Otherwise, it just is dried up apples. So ours is a little juicy.
Okay.
And so I did that. We harvested carrots, we harvested parsnips, we gave them a pre-scrub out in the garden.
Yeah, I was like, we're not bringing all these dirty ass carrots inside to only like have to dirty the one wash basin we have in the sink because the other is taken by the thawing turkey that was still rock hard
after several days in the fridge.
Yep.
So that bucket had so much dirt in it that settled. When I was rinsing it out, it took a while of being upside down with water shooting at it to get all the dirt out.
You're douching it. And it was not coming clean for a while.
No. So we used a trowel to dig up the parsnips and then the carrots. There's a whole tray of greens from those for the bun sprinkles.
Yeah, we have to put those out in the garage to dry because there's
so much.
It's,
but it's going to be good.
It is, like, because it gives them a little bit of nutrition and it gives them something to forage for. That's the purpose.
Yeah. And the packets that you can get store bought are like $7 each.
At least. And they have things that aren't good for them, like puffed corn.
Right.
They which you have to hand pick out.
They don't do well with straight up starch with no fiber.
Yeah.
So we did that. We rinsed. I harvested some nettle. That can be used in the bun sprinkle once it's dehydrated, or tea for humans. I was very cold at work and I couldn't get my fingers warm, so nettle tea might be good for circulation.
Yeah.
That's from the rumor that I heard.
Yeah.
There was that. I feel like we did a, there was a few other things.
There was so much cooking.
And then we brought them in and we, I peeled them all. I have the skin torn away from two fingers to prove it.
Yeah.
But the carrot soup was so good.
Yeah. My grandma's peeler is clutch.
Yeah.
That I got from her.
It's like a little, you put
it's
it
like
over.
It's like brass knuckles.
It's like brass peeler. Knuckles, but a peeler.
Yeah.
So boiled the carrots, roasted the parsnips, and I just threw them with like salt, oil. Pepper, oil.
Yeah.
They went in at the same time as the turkey. But the soup, boiled the carrots, you blended them. Had to add liquid because it was thick.
Yeah.
With two C's.
We also, at the same time, like, fried up onions.
Yep, and the onions, like the aromatics that go in with this for a soup.
Yep.
Use your mortar and pestle for some herbs. Threw it all together. Realized that the turkey wouldn't come out until 9:30
yeah, we
p.m.
Were, we were like, hey, this soup, it's ready to go. Like, we can just warm it up as a side.
Yeah.
And it was 5:15 at that point.
We looked at the instructions and then you did the math for how heavy it was and how many hours per pound. And I was like, well, soup and grilled cheese it is.
Yeah, this turkey, like, it was thought it had to go in the oven anyway. So, like, we threw it in so it could cook. It is whole and uncarved in the fridge right now. And that's what we're doing for, like, an early supper.
Yeah.
So we were like, soup, grilled cheese. I got the Emeril Lagasse sandwich press from the basement.
Gordon Ramsay.
Whatever.
His picture's on the cover.
That's right. Whatever. Some white male cook. Emeril Lagasse has that air fryer oven, like the double door.
Oh, the infomercial. That looks so impractical.
And it is. I've looked up. Like, it's a scam of a little oven.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, it just doesn't do what it needs to do.
That makes sense. Those things are too perfect in the pictures.
Yeah. And as we said, you would never get that thing clean.
Absolutely not. So we did all the things. Although the soup and sandwiches really hit the spot.
They did. That soup is good. And it's a lot. Like, we used all the carrots from a bed. And it, well, not even all of them. Like, the little ones I just threw back in the bed to be compost.
And then I picked some of them out because I'm like, we can save them.
Yeah.
No. They're in with the parsnips.
Yeah. So that was our cooking adventure. We were in the kitchen ever. And
worth it?
Yeah, did most of our dishes as we went along, which helped. And
it
then
really did.
We watched Svengoolie because in the month of October, it's a double feature. So we caught a little bit of House of Wax, but the main attraction for last night was Labyrinth.
The Jim Henson Productions with David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly.
And
I was so excited and I still fell asleep before the end of it.
Well, that's because, so Svengoolie, luckily MeTV picked him up, oh, like a decade ago. So you can catch it nationally on MeTV if you have it locally. If people have cable, still hook up your antenna. Because broadcast TV, I put on broadcast TV a lot for background or just to watch. And he recently got up to 2.5 hours
for
one movie in the past year. Like, it used to be 7 to 9 p.m. Central. And now it's on until 9:30, which means there are more interstitial segments and things like that.
Which have been fun.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of C2E2 content because they're getting through that. And it's like, we were there.
Every time.
Yep. And so Labyrinth started at 9:30, right around the time we were pulling the turkey out to rest. And at 10:30, we were like, let's put leftovers away and watch the rest of this movie from bed.
And I tried. I really did. And I just couldn't make it through.
Yeah. But we saw some of those original outfits and everything, including David Bowie's codpiece at the Museum of the Moving Image in Queens, New York.
It was super cool. And the Skeksis were there for the Dark Crystal, which is going to be the second feature next weekend for Svengoolie.
Yep.
So I'm excited to watch that on the farm and try to answer my uncle's questions of what's happening.
He's going to fall asleep in a chair.
Well, yes, but until then.
And it was a very full Saturday of just, is it homecoring? For us, is it homocoring?
like hardcore, but homecore?
Yes.
But homocore?
Yes, where it's just doing a lot of cooking and harvesting. And it wasn't bad. It was cloudy, but it was still warmish outside, like low 60s, which again...
Like, I sort of regretted having as thick a sweatshirt on as I did, but I was out there in shorts and Chacos.
Yeah.
I mean, something.
We got bit by something. Like, I have a weird... You can even see the little bite mark right in the center of this wound. Like, some sort of fly or something.
Yeah.
Got me on the wrist.
I got one on each leg, one in the middle of my tattoo.
Yeah, it's... And it's perfectly round. Very, it's strawberry colored.
Very red and angry.
Yeah. So that was what we did yesterday. We also played a little of the new Mario Party, which maybe we'll crack into another board today.
Yes, I had fun. And also I won, so.
New mini games are always a challenge. And we've been watching fun things. So over breakfast today, we watched the new Avengers Lego movie with D-Man.
Yes, which was super
shout
fun.
Shout out, just want to shout out Christian Smith. And Chad from Gray Malkin, who did an episode on D-Man,
which is why I love him so much.
And why you're collecting all of his appearances ever,
yes,
in comics.
I'm down to like the weird stuff,
yeah, like the 2000 stuff,
like Ravencroft. I'm missing three venomized issues. But I might keep expanding the Captain Americas because they seem fun,
yeah, the Grunwald run,
yeah. And they're in the cheap boxes.
They are. Like, and that's the beauty. Someone in some group, what was it in? Maybe the Minnesota Comic Exchange local group on Facebook asked, like, what's your favorite era? And I was like, bronze and copper. Give me, like, late 70s to mid-90s, early to mid-90s, before everything got very 90-ized.
Yeah.
Where everyone is all of a sudden very muscular. Like, the end of Alpha Flight, where it's very much influenced by like the X titles, where it's everyone is fucking gigantic. And it's like North Star isn't meant to be like a muscle god. That's not him.
I wonder if that Richter would be either.
When Jimmy Hudson comes back from the dead again, like he was always like my build. Like he's a fucking scientist who built a cybernetic suit, basically. A robot suit to do things, but he's not built in that early burn run. And like he's a normal guy.
And he magically does.
Yeah. So the Quirlin, however you want to pronounce that, when they rebuilt him, apparently gave him gigantic muscles.
Oh. Well, good for him.
But my favorite era, like the Grunwald run, if you haven't, check out the episode I guested on with Sarah Century for best issue ever, where we talk about a Grunwald Captain America, which is super queer, like super lesbian. It's wonderful.
Oh, is that the cruise for all the lady villains?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
So fun.
You know that Rosie O'Donnell was the onboard entertainment for that. So it was, it's a good time. And I almost have all of the Grunwald run. I think I'm missing like one thing. I bit the bullet for one of the expensive issues.
Oh.
Where was that? Not C2E2. A different con or show that we went to. And I'm like, fine, I'll pay $20 for this one issue because it's the first appearance of the new Bucky.
Was that at one of the mermaid shows? I feel
yeah.
There wasn't a lot that we went to between C2E2 and Uncanny.
Yeah, and now we're on self-imposed exile from cons for a while because Fall Con
blew our budgets.
It was like what I'm not going to say it. I won't name names, but I posted on the show page like my Alpha Flight jam piece. One of those artists charged me $60. And
which
I was
like twice as much as
anyone
most of the others.
Else. Straight up twice as much. The nearest one was 40, I believe, and it was worth it because one of those artists was the original run of Alpha Flight. So like but the $60 one had no connection to Alpha Flight, and it was too late. Like, I handed it over. I'm like, here's what I want. And this person was like, $60? And I was like,
they were like, sure. My rate is 60.
And I was like, sure. And that was like a good chunk of the cash I had taken out for that show.
Yeah.
So my budget is recovering, especially since I have a Disney trip coming up. Then we have a Colorado trip for your birthday,
which I'm so excited for. We're going to sit in some amazing hot springs.
With comics.
Yes.
But like dollar comics. So if they fall in or get wrinkly from the humidity, it doesn't matter.
Why does this comic smell like eggs?
So, yeah, we're on an exile from any con. I would love to see... I have to see how my travel budget rebounds. I would love to go to Heroes Con because I'm cooking. I'm cooking up an Alpha Flight project. And what?
I know.
Well, yes. You know. Maybe some listeners don't, though.
Oh.
It's cooking. It's in this Trapper Keeper that's right in front of us, which is full already. So there's going to be a mention of binders in next week's episode. I have another reason for a larger binder. The 1-inch binder, not cutting it with everything I've 3-hole punched for this project as research. So
Trapper Keepers are just so, so 90s.
They are. But again, organization. Wow. So why don't we step into some Star Trek Deep Space Nine, issues 5-7. I have issue 5 right here. We're going to get into it. On the cover, we have Kira, Garrick, and Zial tied up.
Yeah, I had to think for a second. I'm like, oh, this is happening in a very specific part of the DS9 timeline.
It really is. The cover says, Kira's fears come true as the shadow group is revealed.
And you can tell from the shadowy figures' silhouettes that one of them is absolutely Cardassian. Like, that hair, those scales.
Yep.
And one is absolutely Bajoran because they have the earring.
And
a cloak.
This is 1997 DS9.
Yeah.
Zial, not dead.
Not dead.
Did he die? And so we have the Defiant coming back, and on board the Defiant we have Captain Sisko, of course, Dax, Worf, Odo, Bashir, and O'Brien. And they're like, you know, getting back to the station, what adventures the station has had. We're finally getting a handle on repair since, you know, it went through the wormhole
and a whole pylon broke off.
Yes.
Like, why would you say that out loud?
Because then they're approaching and there's a giant explosion.
On the promenade.
Yeah.
I was not prepared for the vertical full 2-page spread.
Yeah. And we go to the interior and everyone's...
shockingly alive.
Yes. So we have obviously some sort of barrier that has been erected to make sure that everyone doesn't get sucked out into space.
Emergency force fields are in place, Captain.
Kira is on site digging through wreckage. Garrick is like, oh, Zial. No, that's not Garrick. That's
Garrick.
Are you sure that's not Dukat with that armor?
He is not present on the station at this time.
Why do they give Garrick armor then?
Garrick has iconic, like, Cardassian civilian clothes with, like, that very 90s geometry.
Yeah.
Like your worksheet for Alpha Flight. Mm-hmm. Like, it's shapes. It's that color palette. It is not anything armor-like. So that, I generally love the art in the Star Trek comic books, but that was why would you make him look like another character.
Yeah, and this is Tom Grinberg on pencils.
Because there's other parts of here that I love the art.
Yeah. So we have Kira trying to help. The crew beams in from the Defiant. They're like, holy fuck, what happened? And
get us there now.
She said Zial is messed up and Bashir is there helping to coordinate the emergency response. But there's a note that's been left. It's a Cardassian scroll. It's a hate letter directed at Zial. I just want to say, Zial did absolutely nothing wrong.
No.
And is a cipher for hate based off of how you're born. That's what Zial is, because she is half Bajoran, half Cardassian.
I was... So, 30-year-old spoiler alert. When she died, I was so mad. Like, there was such rich storytelling potential for her.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having to die in order for Dukat to go off the rails.
Yeah.
Which, he could have gone off the rails anyway.
For real. He could have.
Like, her rejection of him might have been enough.
Yes.
But... I wanted to know more about how she would fit in between either society, either Bajoran or Cardassian. Would she become like some sort of leader for the other folks who are half and half as well?
Yeah.
Like, what is their found home? And like DS9 as a metaphor for a found home for her?
Yes.
I thought was so nice.
Because you know that she wasn't the only product of Cardassians taking advantage of Bajoran slaves.
Yeah.
So this is where we get, okay, why ZL, why now, is basically the setup.
Yeah. Here.
We have a Twizzlers pull and peel ad.
Oh. Do they still make those? They must still make those.
Maybe they taste not, like, I love a Twizzler, but I don't like the taste of pull and peels.
They definitely are different. It's like a different strawberry flavor.
It is.
Like, or different fake strawberry flavor.
It's cherry.
What?
Yeah. It's cherry flavor.
Oh.
That's a different cherry flavor.
There were normal Twizzlers or strawberry. That's why it's different.
Oh.
You heard it here first, folks. We figured it out.
We cut to somewhere in a desert region of Bajor is all we're given. And we have the shadow group meeting in a shadowy table, true to form, discussing how everything is going according to plan.
Oh, good for them.
Back on DS9, we have Zial. She's stable. But then we have people all like black bodysuits being like, haha, we're here to attack you.
Yeah, they are like
ninjas.
Garrick is there for a blood transfusion.
Because they're like, Garrick, your blood is the closest thing we have to being able to synthesize Zial's blood. So we need to take your blood.
You're just a stand-in
and
you'll be fine. Worf and Kira like in the background of...
Odo and Kira.
Odo and Kira are in the background because sort of talking.
Because he morphs his hand into like...
A morning star.
Yeah. To hit these ninjas with. And then they run away.
The station security fields are not fully repaired yet. Which,
no,
shockingly, that's not a thing that was higher up the priority list.
Yeah. So this is the thing, even in, because I'm going to enter into my Trek Corps novel reading this winter again. This station, even when you read Deep Space Nine novels, it is always broken. Space Nine never functions.
I mean, that's why Miles O'Brien is always so tired and always so on the fritz, because the station is on the fritz.
Yeah. So Kira blows in a call to Worf, and she's like, there's another assassination attempt on Zial. So then we have O'Brien, Dax, Worf running, and they corner the ninjas, the Shadow Group ninjas, who then self-immolate.
Yeah, they get to airlock 14. And
which is nothing. There's nothing connected to airlock 14.
No, they get there, and instead of like surrendering or a phaser battle or anything, they set their weapons to overload and are just reduced to piles of dust.
Yep.
I wonder if there was an interview that you sent me for the people who made Birth of the Federation, the computer game. And they were like, we couldn't really do anything new. We only had to use content that was existing within this one particular franchise.
Within TNG.
Yes.
Right.
So that, and you couldn't use like the main cast. So like for the Klingon Empire, it was like Kern or something. The Federation
He does
picture,
not remember.
the Federation picture was Admiral Nichaeov.
Ew, just fucking gross.
Yeah, so you couldn't use like the more iconic people. And I wonder if it's like an unnamed region of Bajor because they couldn't use the regions that were named in the
Maybe.
show.
There is also an ad right here,
Or Cookie Crisp.
which will. Do they make it anymore?
I don't know. I don't think so.
This.
Didn't they bring it back for like a year or
I think they
something?
did. Like in the late 2010s, I feel there is a throwback. Like you can get Cookie Crisp again.
Yeah.
This shit will make the roof of your mouth so bloody and raw
Oh, really?
because it is such an abrasive cereal.
We were never allowed to have
Because it was full of sin or something?
it.
Did one
Well,
of these bandits do drugs and that's why your parents wouldn't let you?
I think it was too sugary, but or we use like our one sugary cereal to get Cinnamon Toast Crunch,
Oh,
which is worth it,
that's
honestly.
fair. You got me the Monster Family of cereals,
I did. I'm like, I got you a surprise from the grocery store.
and I need to get more before it's gone because General Mills, I know you're listening, local Minnesota company. General Mills only produces the Monster Family of cereals in September and October because
And
it's spooky. And it's like, I would eat Count Chocula literally year round and have because I buy extra boxes. And then it gets too stale. And then I make bars out of it with marshmallows.
then it's sad.
Because it's all gone again. But it's such a good time. I really want to try that green, the caramel green apple. One.
Oh,
Maybe I'll get a wild hair up my ass and go to a grocery store on the way to work this weekend
I
or
want
this
to
week.
say Carmella, but that's a wrestler.
No.
But it's like the apple caramel fake
Taste.
flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I haven't tried it before. I'm willing to give it a try. But they. So you got me Frankenberry Booberry,
Count Chocula.
Count Chocula. There is. Did you see it? Yummy Mummy.
I didn't.
Did they retire Yummy Mummy?
Maybe, or I just
If,
didn't
or
notice
Fruit
it.
Brute?
Oh, is that the friend? No, I did not see that at the store.
Because I think those are traditionally other ones that they have.
And now that you say that, I do remember the cereal mummy. Interesting.
Okay. So back in the infirmaries, y'all is like, I'm still not dead. And
I feel fine.
why are they trying to kill me?
They work out a few clues. There's like the scroll that could be Klingon, could not be the bomb. Was oh the bomb is like made with Klingon parts, so they think
So
that the scroll might have been fabricated,
you're right.
and there's like some sort of signal coming from the desert.
We have Dukat on a Klingon bird of prey. Again, this is a very specific time in DS9.
Yes,
It is during the Klingon War.
yeah, there was that episode where they take it over, they basically get their ship blown up by the Klingons, but then they do a thing where they transport the crews to opposite sides, and then they blow up their own ship with all the Klingons on it and take over the Klingon bird of prey.
And this is where Dukat gets the news. Hey, your daughter? Yeah, she two assassination attempts in the last half an hour.
And the spittle is flying.
He's like, "What the fuck do you mean?"
Like, I'll be there shortly. I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself.
It's okay.
Spittle comes later.
Yeah, but anyway, he's on his way. He's a pissed off papa.
Yes.
And they're trying to dig into this. And they know that transmissions are coming from this unnamed region of the desert.
Yes.
So we have Odo and Kira going to figure it out. And Zial,
And Garrett go with?
yes.
She's not taking no for an answer.
No. In the background, if you're hearing things, Asta is going through her tunnel.
She loves a tunnel moment.
She does. Oh, we need to get a new one for Nick and Nora for your place.
Oh,
They don't have a
yeah.
tunnel. They have a trunk though.
They love the
They
trunk.
really do.
It's so weird. Like, I'll go down and Nora will just be a loaf on top of the trunk.
And we'll just stay there,
Yeah.
like unbothered.
Good for her.
All right, back on the Defiant, we have them getting attacked by a Cardassian warship.
Right? No, those are.
It says choom choom choom.
The choom choom chooms are from Federation shuttles that are not from the station. So they're
they're Maquis.
Is this a Maquis thing? Mm. Is on the Maquis after Zial because she's Cardassian-ish?
Whatever.
And they're like, what is happening?
Yeah. A subscription page for Marvel Comics. Because again, we have to read these physically because Marvel doesn't have the license.
And there's some Goosebumps ads.
Yeah, it's the Goosebumps CD-ROM game.
Oh.
The Defiant, this is really fun art. You get the full bridge scene.
I might have read it as just like one page at a time without realizing that it's a full spread.
Yep. And
she had a treat there like 3 days ago, so she's digging to try and find more treat crumbs. Yes. It's O'Brien and Worf and Sisko on the Defiant trailing another thread. So they are doing what you don't do in horror movies. They're dividing themselves up to try and figure out things faster.
They decloak, they stabilize all the Federation shuttles out there. They beam aboard these Cardassians.
Because the shuttles are set to blow.
And they're like, you'll never defeat the Shadow Group. I say that because the Shadow Group has a very specific font and coloring.
Yes.
And it's two steps short of having TM behind it. Like, Marvel was so fucking close to being like, we are trademarking the Shadow Group, and it's going to be a big bad through all of the Star Trek comic book.
We'll get to that at the end of the issue.
Yeah.
But the it's a reveal. Why would you reveal your big bad unprompted?
It's so James Bondy.
Especially when you're about to blow yourselves up to not give information to anyone else about who you are, or your agents self-immolate because they aren't supposed to give information about who they are. It's just so strange. So I had a plot question about that.
Mm.
And now we get the spittle from Dukat.
He's like, what do you mean my daughter is down on this fucking planet?
She just had surgery. She's still very weak. And
someone tried to kill her twice in half an hour.
Twice in half an hour. And you let her go. And like, he's screaming into the view screen. Like, I'm surprised there's not like those big fuzzy blobs because the spittle landed on the camera. Like, it's that close.
So we're in a desolate desert hill on Bajor. Again, unnamed.
You could have made up any name.
And this is where the cover comes in. So they're tied up, and we have this Bajoran coming with this little orb, which is also on the cover.
It's Odo. They made Odo get into a bubble, otherwise they would have killed the other three.
Really rude.
Yes.
So they're like, what are you doing? You're fighting with, you're side by side with Cardassians. What the fuck is wrong with you, Bajoran? And Cardassians is in a very specific font. And the Bajoran is like, it's a new war against Cardassia, but this time it's like a civil war, so we can take advantage.
Yeah. And
Kira's like, this is dumb.
This is clearly dumb. They are going to betray you, but she even knows the person.
Yeah.
She had like these thought bubbles of like, this rings a bell. This is just like so-and-so from back in the Resistance.
Yeah.
Like same tactic sort of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And she's pissed. She hates Bajorans who weren't with Cardassians.
Yeah.
Against the interests of Bajor.
Yeah, fuck them is her attitude. Back on the Defiant, we have the continued discussion about we have a lot going on.
Yeah.
You've reached the end of your thread. Now you need to go back because there is trouble back on DS9. Kira's runabout, it's missing.
It blew up.
There's no signal from them.
Yeah.
And he's like, with the Defiant sensors, I can tune to Odo's frequency because he's the only changeling.
Yeah.
So if we find the changeling, we'll find them. And
but does Odo even need rescuing? Because no, he's very clever.
He's in this tube. I mean, Marvel Comics loves putting a person in a tube.
It's true.
And he's in a tube, and he is taunting them. He's like, you stupid fucks. You put me in a tube and forgot to put the door on. Yes. And I became the door. Part of me is the door.
I don't understand. How do you forget to put the door on a tube? When you put someone in it, why wouldn't you just keep him in a bubble?
It's like leaving a burner on.
They and their house has burned down because he kicks, whooshes out the golden wave.
He literally splooshes them.
Is sploosh the onomatopoeia?
Sploosh.
Oh no.
Like it's Archer. It's Pam from Archer.
Oh.
And
that's a throwback.
It is. But now that you added a separate screen for me for Netflix, I can fall asleep to Archer.
Oh.
So the gang of four, they get some guns. They're firing their way out. And they're like, we need to get far enough away because it's a dampening field. We're trying with our comm badges to call up. It's not working.
Yeah.
Run for the hills, literally. Let's go that hill and we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
We get a big ad for Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Which I have right there.
Oh, yeah.
Three omnibuses of Thunderbolts.
You know, it was three. I don't even know who they are.
That one's hot. So, hey. Hot. Hey. We have Mockingbird here, too.
Oh.
No. Yes. Not Mockingbird.
Songbird?
Songbird. Yes.
What's her face from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes. And this bad bitch, that looks like it's made for Demanda Martini.
Oh, that hair.
Yeah. That dumb headpiece. Those pointy shoulder pads. Hi, Demanda. We love you.
We do. And now all I can hear in my head when I see someone with a costume is, that's a dumb headpiece. I love it.
Yes. All right. So we see them get to the hills, but then baddies beam in.
The baddies are there. And shockingly, the Cardassians shoot the Bajoran in the back.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by this?
Absolutely not.
Me neither.
So.
And he should have known better.
And swooshing in, we have Dukat's Bird of Prey and DS9 Runabouts. Gul Dukat's Bird of Prey also has very specific font and coloring.
Oh, yes, it does.
And then Kira starts shooting some Cardassians.
Her iconic happy place.
Yes, her happy place. Iconic. The rest of the people in armor give up. And then Zial is reunited with her father on DS9 a short time later. And we get Dukat begrudgingly thanking, like, thanks for saving her life, I guess.
Even though you put it in danger.
Cool. And then he's like, but I have places to go, so I'm abandoning you again, daughter.
Yeah.
Bye. And the parting words are, don't cry any tears for Gul Dukat, Zial. I think it's safe to say we'll see him again soon.
Well, yeah.
So,
I mean, enjoyed it, but also was so disappointed that this, sort of like this, they built up the circle at the end of season one of DS9.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, oh, this could be a big bad. Like, it could be, like, great plot, great storytelling for more than just one issue. But it was just, like, some background stuff, and now they're done.
Yeah, and the background stuff in the first four, like, it's been a while since we read those issues.
Yes.
But this did not ring a bell, and I'm like, who? This big reveal in issue five, and who?
Yeah.
It was perplexing.
I was anticipating a bigger ground game from them.
Yep.
And a little bit like Hydra, where they would just keep popping up.
Yeah.
The circle stuff was good. Like, it was sort of that politicking Game of Thronesy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But DS9, decades before Game of Thrones was a thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It was interesting to see it sort of capped off in a one-off issue.
Yeah.
That doesn't really tie to the past ones a whole lot.
And their stakes seemed small.
Yes.
Like, I was anticipating like a whole planetary takeover, like a full armed faction someplace. And maybe it's because they are pinned into a very specific time in DS9.
And it is 97, so they're writing it. If I flip to the beginning, where it will have this was dated March 97, so it came out in January 97-ish.
Oh.
So they're working off of, if they're extremely lucky, the beginning of that season, like the first two episodes before they turn in the script to see what's going on currently.
Oh.
But odds are they were working off the prior season,
Yeah, so does it make sense?
because that would have been season three, I believe, of DS9. That was their last true reference point
Oh.
of fully cooked ideas. And
So,
maybe they saw scripts. I know that there's a really good relationship, probably, between, I feel we've seen interviews or something where they were able to see scripts as they're being turned in for upcoming episodes.
oh, gotcha.
So they might have been able to play off of a little bit of that, but
So
yeah.
maybe it's just that I love this universe, and like when there's tidbits like this that I want more of,
Yeah.
and then it takes a while for my brain to catch up and be like, no, it's constrained by the show,
Yeah.
by like other things that
They.
are canon and take primacy over the comic book.
Yeah, it's not like. So Star Wars at this time was in a lull, but this is where the expanded universe really took off with Timothy Zahn's books, like,
That are now apocryphal.
and
Yeah.
yeah, and the Dark Horse comics, like, they could do whatever the fuck they wanted because no new shit was being made. This
Yeah.
is in the midst of.
In the middle of it.
In the middle of it, two shows pumping out new episodes all the time on a weekly basis, and you have the TNG movie still coming out every couple years.
Yeah.
So,
So it makes sense.
yeah.
And I guess it's a credit to the writers that it's such a rich universe for that storytelling and a lot of opportunities to tell engaging, like, well, the stories that I want to hear, want to read.
Yeah.
So
At the,
also a lot of Kazar ads.
yeah. So I picked up one. I feel this is more than like 22 pages of story. Like, these Star Trek books are long.
They have a lot more words than modern comic books too.
They do. And then you get bullpen bulletins. You get something about the Beast being in his own series, and it's written by Keith Giffen, who is the co-writer with J.M. DeMatteis of Justice League International. He created
Oh.
Lobo. He did work on Excalibur, like, master storyteller. He passed away last year.
Oh, that's right.
I had no clue that he wrote a Beast limited series.
Oh.
So I really hope our friends over at the Avenging Hour cover that. Maybe.
That'd be fun.
And then you get the checklist for everything coming out. Spider-Man Cyber Comic number 35. Marvel ahead of the game.
Oh.
Cyber Comics. But yes, Kazar, they are getting ready to launch the 90s Kazar.
Because Shanna's in very little clothing.
And he is roided the fuck out.
Yeah.
But it is multiple pages just talking about Kazar. All right, let's get to this two-issue arc that you are taking point on. Because I think you liked it.
I did. It's a different vibe. It's not based on the station. It is based off of Starfleet being Starfleet, going out into the unknown and finding an anomaly and
Yeah.
then messing some shit up about it.
Yeah.
So it's also, I'll preface it with the comment I alluded to before of I feel like specifically Dax and Kira, their voices are coming through as if it's the characters from the show. Like, in I think one of my critiques of one of the DS9 books is that it didn't sound like them. Like the character
Yes.
dialogue wasn't there, which makes sense because it was super early.
Yeah.
But the dialogue here, like you get the snark, you get the fun, you get the like, yes, I can absolutely hear Nana Visitor and Terry Farrell saying these lines. Like, I can hear that in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was super great.
And this issue, these two issues that we're cracking into right now are written by a different person.
Oh.
So this one that we just got done with was written by Mariano.
This one is Howard Weinstein.
Yes. So you have two issues written by Weinstein.
Grinberg is still the penciler. I might be a terrible person and say Tim Tui, the editor, missed a typo.
Yes, he did.
In like someone's name.
Yeah.
In one of the text bubbles.
It reverses E and I believe. It's O'Brien and O'Brien. It comes.
There's another one. Oh, I missed that one.
There's an O'Brien.
It's one of the aliens.
Oh.
So.
Tim, let's have a chat.
Things happen. It's they do. Fine.
Oh, I know. Especially with how many Trek comics, because I'm guessing Tim was the editor of the entire Trek line at this point. And we've seen, like, it is a very intense, like, 2-year period where they pumped out dozens of Trek comics. So.
And also in the credits, someone's job is Starfleet.
No.
Chip Carter is there. As Starfleet, like, I guess it's some sort of consultant to make sure that everything is in universe and
maybe
canon is appropriate. Because there's writer, penciler, inker, colorist, letters, editor, Starfleet, and then editor-in-chief.
Yeah, because Chip Carter in this previous one is Starfleet Operations.
That's fun.
Is that the Paramount liaison title?
It's got to be. So also starting in these comics, there's... You had the name for them. It's like the display screen that you would see on a starship.
It's LCARS.
Like the Federation blue, Federation yellow, those shapes that go across the top and mm-hmm. down the left side. So that's how we get the captain's log.
And so fair warning to anyone reading these, have light. Because I was trying to read them by like just a lamp. And it's such small type that you have to like get close to the page.
And the colors... make it hard to pop. Like the colors are appropriate.
Oh, absolutely.
But if it was like 5 times larger.
Yes.
And on a glowing screen.
Yeah.
So they're investigating an anomaly. It is an unexplained source of time displacement and spatial distortion. So there's a whole bunch of tachyons messing things up. It's messing up the sensors even.
Oh.
So they're having a hard time calculating the size of these displacement waves that are mm-hmm. coming through.
And it's Star Trek, so of course they're in a mystery cloud.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a mystery cloud. They're trying to get readings, and all of a sudden...
I do love that, like, they're hit by the wave, and Dax is like, see what I mean, Benjamin? And he's like, ugh.
Their shit gets rocked. And...
Yeah, and it's the energy from their sensors that's messing it all up.
Yeah.
So they figure that part out. They shut them down. O'Brien's like, it's too late because of course it is. The anomaly is imploding. And if they get hit by that energy wave, it'll crush their hull. So they try to make an escape. There's a boom in the background, you know, the void of space.
Yep.
Carries onomatopoeias. And they can't outrun it. They get hit and they get rocked. So shields are 38%.
Yeah, like it's going bad.
Inertial dampeners are offline, so you know people are flying all over.
Mm-hmm.
And they even lose artificial gravity, which you don't see often, which granted makes sense because of the special effects part of it.
Yep.
But like, you know, that's got to be going on and off all the time in those starships.
Mm-hmm.
So they bounce around. O'Brien, of course, fixes things and everyone lands with an oomph. He does try to warn them, though.
Yeah.
And Sisko's like, good job, Chief, more or less. So they try to figure it out. So much is offline, but O'Brien works his magic, gets the view screen going, and there are these gigantic ships, like 100 times the mass and volume of the Defiant.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Dr. Koth of the Shern, and they were actually running an experiment. They're like, we must meet. We expect your full cooperation in our investigation, the investigation of the disaster caused by your ship.
And they're caught by 3 different tractor beams.
Which I don't get. Like, Do they just need all of them to
tether?
Yeah, without somehow ripping this Defiant apart?
I don't know, but they're towed to this planet.
Yeah, that's like a base on a moon.
Whatever.
That's the laboratory base. And so it was an experiment, and Sisko tries to Starfleet his way out of it. Like, Dr. Koth, we had no way of knowing that anomaly was artificial. We can hardly be held responsible for it. And he's like, oh no, you will.
Are.
There's going to be a trial. And Star Trek does do trial, like courtroom dramas, mm-hmm. pretty well.
They do.
The Drumhead is one of our friend Josh's favorite yeah. episodes. The one in Strange New Worlds is really good. The one in DS9 settling the question about Dax and the Trill is a current host responsible for the actions of a past host? And how do you define personhood at that point? Anyway.
So we're set up for a trial. Sisko's like, you'll put me on trial. I will take responsibility. My crew had nothing to do with this.
Like, I'm the captain. They were following orders.
Yep. You can almost hear the People's Court theme in the background. Dun-dun-dun-dun.
I don't know if I know that.
No. You had a sad lack of daytime TV.
And I was very sheltered. Although the Jenny Jones episode with Buff Bagwell left a mark.
It was your gay awakening.
One of many. So the Shern were... It was like 3 centuries in the making to figure out how to do these portals through time and space. And so after years of effort, they finally created a stable conduit and a one-person travel pod able to withstand passage through that conduit. And there was a test pilot, and that pod and person are gone. So for the death of that person, that is why Sisko is on trial. And Dax gets to be the defense lawyer. So that's fun.
Yeah.
The role that we haven't seen her take on before. So they're playing baseball in the hold. They are sort of time on strategy. And Dax is confident, like, still find something. They always find something. And just on to be on the safe side, O'Brien is also going over the sensor data as to find anything else. So Dax meets up with Dr. Maiev, and the typo I found is later on he's called Dr. Maeve.
Oh.
So he's there to give her sort of like the crash course in this culture, like what can she expect?
And he gives a whole, he spills the tea. He was like, you know what? We could be a really great society, but they keep pouring money into science.
Which is like the opposite of...
Which, wow, fam, just, I can't believe the audacity of science. Like, they went too far. They are...
Like, they're starving farmers because they are putting so much priority into these conduits.
Yes, and it's not just conduits, we come to find out. They have their finger in a billion different pots.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of pots, you just learned about Paste Pot Pete. Which you thought I was saying Piss Pot Pete.
Because you said it so fast.
Piss Pot Pete. You have to say it fast. But he was in the new Lego Avengers.
I'm glad that Iceman was in there too.
More than once.
With a speaking part.
Yeah, with his little sounds like bing, 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 bing. As he was putting ice on the little Galactus.
Dustbuster?
Yes.
Yes. It was fun.
It was. So, again, highly recommend.
There's a moment, of course, with Bashir and O'Brien, and O'Brien's trying to work things out.
I got excited by that action figure ad, but those action figures actually look really bad.
That they're massive and chiseled and ripped, just like Son of Satan.
And the first one is Scarecrow from Batman. I don't need Scarecrow with a six pack.
No.
No.
Bane looks appropriate, though.
Okay. So O'Brien's digging through stuff.
Not coming up with much.
No.
So Bashir is there to sort of add the pressure onto Dax. So like, at least Dax will come up with something. So she goes and meets with Dr. Koth, and he's like, oh, I hope that was helpful to you. And she's like, actually, it was the least helpful thing that I've gotten. And like, no one here will tell me anything. And he's like, well, that's unfortunate because that's the extent of our cooperation with you. And she's
so
like,
the discovery period of this trial not yielding a whole lot.
No. And she's being basically shut out of what she needs to know. So Dr. Maeve follows her. She's like, I'm leaving. Like, this is unhelpful and not worth my prep time. And he does spill the tea of, like, not everyone's on board with this specific project. And they even have to go to a ship to get enough privacy to figure out, to sort of explain more of what's happening. So it's all on a data chip because, of course.
Yep.
I mean, could they... I feel like Data Chip is very original series. It could have come up with a different name, like how they have isolinear rods.
Yeah.
Or isolinear chips.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this home first movement on this planet.
make home great again.
Are
they working with Trumpers?
And they're like, they're ignoring all these problems that civilizations with less technology have already solved.
Mm.
But like, you need a balance of like maintenance and forward thinking.
Yeah.
They have not done any maintenance. So that's when you get the starving farmers look. And people who are like, this project is too big, too dangerous to continue. So Dr. Koth is anxious to find a scapegoat for it. And they need the hearing to go against Sisko. So that it'll still seem like, oh no, it was worth it. It was these people that messed it up. Therefore, it's all their fault.
Right.
It's not our fault. So the hearing does not go well. We get some more of those Elkar panels for Dax's personal log. And the judges, all scientists that at work on this project, are hardly objective. I believe their minds are already made up, and it'll take a miracle to save Benjamin. So O'Brien figured it out. He has a theory that the conduit may not have been destroyed. It might have just been shifted violently out of phase, caught between alternate coexisting time-space matrices, which sounds like a headache of math.
So he's seeking permission to go forth.
Yes. And they're like, yeah, see what you can find out. Koth doesn't want to hear about it. He's like, there's no way that you simpletons could come up with a response that we have not thought of. And you're just looking to find anything to take the blame away from Sisko. And even Maeve is like, but isn't it possible? And he's like, no, I'm leaving. Blech. So O'Brien seethes. He's like, if it's proof they want, it's proof they'll get. And he tries, but he loses three probes.
Yeah.
You know what his solution is to losing three probes?
Go in there himself.
To go in there himself.
So he's like,
which is a choice.
I will shimmy myself into a probe and shoot myself into this.
I can pilot around the gravity well that swallowed the other probes. And Kira's like, no.
No.
Kira's like, Kira's right. No.
Worf is like, no.
So the deliberations are over. They'll have their verdict. Kira leaves. O'Brien's like, well, they didn't tell me no. So I'm just going to do it since it's not technically violating a direct order. So Bashir's like, hey, this blinking light, we just launched a probe. And Worf is like, no, come back here. And O'Brien's like, well, I guess now I'm defying a direct order.
He's defying the defiant.
Har har.
And he's off.
He's off and running. And Worf thinks to himself, this is not a good day. How could it get any worse? And then the verdict comes down.
Guilty.
Guilty, and it's a life for a life with these people. So Sisko will be killed.
Slated for execution.
Yes.
But don't worry, part two is right here.
It is. Chief O'Brien is on the cover, the most important man in Starfleet history.
And his probe.
And his probe.
We open to the probe going through some really neon-y...
The probe is entering.
Yes. Neon-y gas cloud. It's very psychedelic. It's very 97, actually. Like, you think about Austin Powers coming out in 97. Same aesthetic here.
You know what the aesthetic is? The color palette that they used? One of those specialty Starburst packages.
Oh.
Where it's like the lime green, the orange, the pink, and the
You got tangerine.
Yeah, it's like the tropical fruits Starburst.
Oh, I love Starburst. Like, I wish I had a bag of them right now.
Like,
I would stop myself up for a week.
They would come in that like teal package that had the tropical ones. And I think there was an alternative fruits one that was like a purple package.
Yep. Now, I don't know if they still have, they had the all red as well.
Oh.
And like 10 years ago, all reds.
Which is
that was some good shit.
The strawberry ones are always the first two.
Strawberry, cherry, fruit punch, which I love fruit punch Starburst. And I forget the other one.
Do they make a raspberry one that wasn't blue?
Maybe.
So
he's probing his way.
Yeah. And I say this every time we do a Star Trek issue, but the penciling and the art is indeed so good.
We still have Howard Weinstein writing.
Yes.
What's Chip Carter in this one?
It's not Chip Carter. Back when they spelled out what VC stood for.
Virtual calligraphy.
Yeah. For letters, Matt Webb, Chip. Oh, Chip Carter's on colors? Oh, no, Matt Webb colors. This is just spaced very strangely. Chip Carter is Navigator.
I have an answer for you. I just looked it up on Memory Alpha.
Oh, the official, like, are the answers come from when we go to Star Trek trivia.
Chip Carter is an American author and former Paramount Pictures staff member. Well, at Paramount Pictures, he was in charge of approving comic book scripts. So we were right.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
So
we need to get Chip Carter for this. Hey, Chip. Give us everything. He also authored the reference books included with the Star Trek Light and Sound Borg Cube.
Ooh.
Which sounds like a toy. The Star Trek Light and Sound Communicator, definitely a toy. And the Star Trek Light Up Shuttlecraft. He has an official website. Is it still active? It is the official superheroic website of Chip Carter.
Oh, good for him. So we got O'Brien in his probe. And I don't know why he thought this would be a rescue mission.
Chip Carter wrote Trivial Pursuit Golden Girls edition.
Good for him.
Wow. That's fun.
Very interesting.
I'm going to dig into this week.
Okay.
Maybe I'll develop a Star Trek project after the Alpha Flight project.
Do you need more projects?
To live. Not to make money. I can tell you that.
So he's in this probe that does not look like it has a whole lot of room in it. So I don't know if there's transporters. I don't know how he's planning on rescuing anyone when it's like him in a torpedo. But there he is. He has a moment in this.
So this is the thing with torpedoes. We bury people in those. Spock was buried in a torpedo.
But this is clearly a bolus. Well, it's not really a bolus since it's not like armed and glowing like a torpedo would be. But it's a torpedo shape. It's...
Yeah.
Yeah. So O'Brien is fixing things as they go offline. And then he gets a surreal computer. What's happening? As his face gets swooshed into a blur.
Yeah, he's going through some distortion.
And you know what this would look like if it was TV. And they do a good job, I feel, of making it happen for a comic book.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Kira's like, I'm going to kill him. And Worf walks in, he's like, I'm going to kill him. Which, this was one of those moments of like, yes, I can see Kira just like shaking her fist and being frustrated by O'Brien just going off. So Dax is still on it. The probe is making its way back through the green and purple swirls. And he's like, the welcoming committee? And Dax is like, har har, try lynch mob. So he's like, I know that I'm in trouble. I know I disobeyed orders. But after we tell the Shuren what we found, then you can do what you want. And Kira's like, did you find the pilot? But he says, no, but we were on the right track. Those gravity wells aren't obstacles. They're like a key. They're a corridor connecting different layers of the space-time fabric. So the co-pilot could have survived. And Kieran's like, well, don't you dare say the word preposterous, Dr. Koth. And he's like, I would not dignify your wild claim with even that level of credibility.
Rude.
Because O'Brien's like, no, there's evidence right here. Like, I have the pad. I'm shoving the pad in your face.
This is actual evidence.
Yeah. And he's like, I am not convinced to reopen this. So Dr. Maiev is still there. Like, he's upset that Koth won't even consider the possibility that the pilot, Garapel, might still be alive. And so Kira's like, well, can you do anything useful with all that rage that you're feeling? And he's like, well, I can find out what Koth and the others are hiding, but we'll have to hurry and I'll need your help. And Dax is like, yes, on it. Hacking into files. Love it. We got some Elkars from Kira this time. First officer's log. So Maiev and Dax come back in and it's worse than he suspected, or as he suspected and worse than he feared. So it's a classified report that they found saying, like, this is not stable, it's not safe. They only made one shuttlecraft to go through it. All these red flags. And then just ignored all the warnings and went ahead anyway. It disregarded all standard safety protocols. They were so desperate to launch this test flight that they created their only functional prototype. And they're like, why would they do this? And it's like, fear of failure and competition. In this society, science has become the god held above all things. So for this project competes with funding for other great notions, such as sending dozens of giant colony ships to all the quadrants, trying to create functioning stars out of gas giants. And if you don't need to terraform a planet, you can just make a planet.
From junk in space.
From space junk. Which actually does sound kind of cool.
Yeah. But anyway, that you can see that this government sort of sucks.
Yeah. They are not prioritizing anything helpful. So they approach Koth, and they even lead off with, like, we found these in your secret files. I'm like, what did you expect? He hits Maiev upside the face.
Deserved.
Yeah. So they're like, unhand me. You can fight all you want later. Right now, there can be no rescue. And, like, they can generate another conduit, but they don't have any ships that are possible small enough to fit through. Oh, and do you know what they say? Lube up the Defiant. So O'Brien is working on retrofitting things. Kira's sort of going through some of the worst case scenarios. She's like, there's a lot of maybes and I don't like any of them. But Dax chimes in, trying to rescue that pilot is the right thing to do and our best chance to free Benjamin. And O'Brien points out that not a single maybe in that bunch, Major. So, like, just the image and the tone of her thought bubble, like, all right, you two, make this work. There's another one of those moments where, like, you can hear her say that in a show.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was one of those impulse shuttles that they used during the occupation, she'd be having a lot more fun.
She would.
So some more Elkars with the retrofit underway. We're about to get going. Sensors and shields are all calibrated to fit the conduit's energy harmonics, so they shouldn't disrupt anything.
Hopefully.
Because they're in sync with them.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, Dr. Maiev, thank you. We couldn't have done this without you. And they have, like, a little smirking moment. And she's like, oh, I see we share a gift for occasionally inappropriate humor. And he says, so much in common, Jadzia. Too bad we haven't the time to be star-crossed lovers. She says, too bad. So Maiev. Which I thought was like, is this supposed to be maybe? But then I realized it was a typo with his name. Why are you doing all this? And he sort of wants to, he was running the project and sort of got demoted from it. So he's a little spiteful, just a little petty. So things are going, they open the anomaly again. And Koth is like, you have a courageous crew and they're dedicated, risking their lives for us. And Sisko is like, not for you, Dr. Koth, for that missing pilot of yours who doesn't deserve to be a victim of your arrogance.
Oof.
Laying the smack down. So they get going.
They're flying through. Things start out nicely.
Something in the impulse engines is out of phase. This starts to do the swooshy thing. O'Brien goes flying and hits a bulkhead. But Maiev has got it. Like, he's been so helpful. He fixes the things. And I was so shocked in this panel. He's like got one of those malevolent finger pointy things.
Yeah.
And he jabs O'Brien.
Yeah.
What a betrayal.
Like, poisons him.
I was pissed.
Very rude.
So he says, sorry, Chief, nothing personal. You've got your mission and I've got mine. Kira's like, what's happening in engineering? I'm going to go down there. And so Maeve was like, oh, I've got to work fast. Dax is locked out from engineering and she heads down. She confronts Maeve. And he's like, oh, no, it's too late, because they always have to say that. And so she starts fixing things and it's like, one question, why? Shurin Society's mindless devotion to advancing technology has to stop before we lose our souls to it. Everyday lives have got to be more important than these useless monuments to science gone mad. And so from the other side of the room, like, she's pointing a phaser at him. But they get rocked by one of the swooshes and he attacks. He gets her to drop the phaser, but she just backhands him.
Yeah.
Just like Dracula and Nightwing. Just...
Yes. Which you can hear about next week, everyone.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert, since we just talked about that issue. So Dex, reaching for panels, he's grappling with her, and she kicks his ass.
Yeah, good for her.
Like, she throws him over her shoulder. He hits a bulkhead. Worf entering phasers him, saying, I thought you might need assistance. And she's like, I didn't, but I guess thanks. So things get back to going. Dax is like, stop gabbing and help me. And he says, Klingons do not gab. And she says, want to bet? Kor gabs. And Worf is like, oh, I suppose he does. Which is such a fun throwback joke. Yeah. Like, that's like the show with their constant running gags that I love so much. So they go through, they find the shuttle, the test pilot. They get out just as the anomaly implodes again. And they get everyone back. Maiev isn't changed. Koth is super unappreciative. And he's like, oh, maybe we can work with you. Maybe, even though I don't like you. And Sisko's like, you're welcome. But if our peoples meet again, I hope it'll be as friends. But the Federation is, we choose our associations carefully. And you might not make the list.
Oof.
So
yeah, I don't want to see these people again.
Yeah.
They suck.
Dax is like, I'm not on anyone's side. As a great Trill philosopher once said, life needs to balance between the mundane and the monumental. And as they're walking away, Sisko's like, did you really just quote yourself? And she says, why live seven lives if you can't quote yourself once in a while? Which, fair point.
Yeah.
And that's the issue.
Yeah, I'd say that was a really fun two-issue arc.
Yeah. Some in-depth alien stuff. Yep. More intrigue than what we normally get from some of these.
Mm-hmm.
The resolution wasn't so rushed. So, I mean, the rescue was, but how, you don't need pages in a comic book about going through an anomaly.
Yeah, it's true.
Not when there's other stuff to discuss.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I loved the little snarky bits. Stop gabbing.
Yes. So I guess that's our latest adventure with Star Trek.
Yeah.
And there's still plenty more. So I is sort of plotting out Deep Space Nine and going through the short box.
I'm glad you're more organized about this.
It goes a while. Of course, we have the telepathy war issues that we'll be not covering, because that's going to be an event.
Yes. For our event coverage.
Yes. But there's still a decent amount of Deep Space Nine. So this is probably one of their longest running Star Trek titles.
Good for them.
Yep. So we'd love to hear from you all. What did you think of these three issues? Would you rescue someone from an anomaly.
And how important to you is the tone of the characters in the book? Because that's what really came through in these issues that made me really like them. So do other folks have similar issues about that?
Let us know. And we will catch you here next time. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Be well.
Bye.